You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are listening to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, September 13th, 2018. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you like the show, subscribe on either iTunes or Spotify, and please leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do like it. Thursday means mailbag day, so let's jump into the questions listeners submitted in the comment section of GangreneNation.com. We begin with a question about that I think relates to the stories about the how the Jets knew the Lions' signals Monday night. It became a big story because a number of Jets in the post-game period spoke with the media and said that they knew what Detroit's signals were on offense. So this question is, did the Dolphins sign Travis Swanson because they were trying to learn the Jets' signals slash plays? And, of course, Swanson spent the preseason with the Jets, and he's actually with the Lions last year. So, you know, I guess the theory would go that Swanson helped the Jets learn the Lions' signals. I'm not saying he did. I'm guessing that's part of the question here. I gotta be honest with you. I think that this whole story is a little overrated. You can know exactly what the other team is running. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to stop it. I think that because these NFL offensive plays are very sophisticated things. They're designed to try and create problems for the defense. They're designed to create a hole in the defense to exploit. So it doesn't really matter. I shouldn't say it doesn't matter at all, but I think the impact is definitely overstated because New England has a series of base plays. New England can run the same play over and over three times and a half, and it doesn't mean that the other team can stop it. You watch the other team on film. I mean, the teams have tendencies in the NFL. If guys go out and execute, it doesn't matter. So I think some of this stuff's overstated. I think in terms of, learning the Jets' plays, I'm not sure how much that really helps because you have to remember what an NFL playbook looks like. An NFL playbook has hundreds and hundreds of plays in it, and only 30, 40, 50 make it into the game plan. So it doesn't really help you to have another team's playbook because we're talking hundreds of plays. You don't know which plays they're actually going to run on game day, and the playbook's just too big to learn all of them in time for the game. And even if you learn all of them in time for the game, how much does it really help you? Because you're only going to see a small percentage of the plays in the playbook. So, I think a lot of this stuff's probably overrated. And like I said, the other thing is this stuff's all on film. If you want to study a team's signals, you can watch film. I mean, you can take a look at that. So I don't think so. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I think that the impact is probably more minimal than you would think. I think that this whole story is being a little overblown. I think the big thing from Monday night was not that the Jets knew what plays the Lions were running. I think it's that the Jets went out there and executed. So that's kind of where I come from on this whole situation. And I wouldn't worry about it. The Jets have had plenty of situations where somebody's signed with a new team and they've gone out and played well anyway. And, Jets have signed guys on an upcoming opponent. The opponent's gone out and played well. It's not something that I think is going to make the difference between winning and losing. And I don't think it made the difference Monday night. I don't think that's the reason the Jets won the game. Next question, prior or curse? And I'm assuming that the question pertains to whether Terrell Pryor or Jermaine Kearse should get more playing time. And I will start out by saying that I think the Jets need to look to load the field with wide receivers more frequently. Jeremy Bates likes using the tight end a lot. And if you look at the playing time stats from week one, three tight ends had at least 48% of the snaps, and all four tight ends played at least one quarter of the snaps. And you look at the strengths and weaknesses of this team, that's not where it is. This team's stronger at wide receiver than it is tight end. But you asked the question, so you want an answer to your question. Right now, I would probably lean toward giving Terrell Pryor more playing time. And that could change during the course of the season, but I'd want to see what Pryor can do. He's just a more physically gifted player. He's a guy who's, you know, he's a big-bodied receiver, you know, still pretty athletic. I just think he brings more to the table than Kearse. And quite frankly, I think that this fan base overrates Kearse a little bit. You know, last year was his career year, and wasn't that great of a career year. He had 810 yards on 65 catches. That's not spectacular. And you look at his career before that, not all that productive with a good quarterback in Russell Wilson. I think Kearse is a quality slot receiver. If you look at his production, you stick him in the slot, he's pretty good. You stick him outside, not that great. You know, he's kind of a what I call a jag. Just, you know, I think Parcells was the guy who came up with the term jag, just another guy. He's just not a guy who overwhelms me with his physical tools. And there were periods last year where he kind of disappeared. You know, there were some very good games. There absolutely were. But there were also some periods where he was not so great, some periods where he disappeared. Now, Pryor, I think, might have a lower floor. Last year in Washington was not a particularly good one for him. But he had a quality week one of this season for the Jets. And even if we're talking a lower floor, where's Kearse going to be? Is Kearse going to replicate a career year? I'm not so sure he is. I think it might be logical to expect him to fall back to earth a little bit. So I'm not so sure that Pryor's floor is that far beneath what you can reasonably expect from Jermaine Kearse this year. I do think his ceiling is much higher, though, and I think, you know, if Pryor plays up to what the Jets are hoping he can bring, you add him to Robbie Anderson and Quincy Enunwa, that's a really good receive. That could be a really good receiving core, and it could be a receiving core that complements each other pretty well. Again, I would like to see the Jets use four receiver sets once Kearse returns, and maybe scale back the tight ends a little bit, just because I don't think there's a lot of quality at the tight end position this year. I thought Neil Sterling played a nice game. I liked what he brought to the table. The other tight ends, though, I mean, they did not really do a whole lot. I thought, you know, I was not that impressed by the tight ends who weren't Sterling. And even Sterling, I mean, Sterling did not look like a Pro Bowler. He played a decent game. He played a solid game. But I'd like to see Jeremy Bates maybe spread the field a little bit more with multiple wide receivers. Sometimes play to your strength a little bit more. You know, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And MyBookie has live in-game betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar if you use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie today, that's MyBookie, and use promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid at MyBookie. The Athletic is a subscription-based publisher of smarter sports coverage for diehard fans. The Athletic's model is simple. No ads, no pop-ups, and no autoplay videos. Instead, readers subscribe for authentic, in-depth coverage written by journalists who know their teams inside and out. Coverage will go beyond game recaps and trade speculation to provide smarter analysis and a deeper perspective about teams and the league. Subscribers have access to local and national content, with more than 650 new stories published every week across all sports. Subscribe and be part of the future of sports journalism. The Jets have Connor Hughes and Gary Myers writing about them, and if you go to theathletic.com/lockedonjets, you can get 40% off your subscription. Again, that's theathletic.com/lockedonjets for 40% off your subscription. Our next question, what did you think about the all-white Jets uniform on the Monday night game? Would you agree that this is the GOAT color combination, GOAT greatest of all time color combination? Yes, and here's what I really, really liked about it. The white face masks. I just think that that's a great look. I think it's such a great, clean look. And I'm not going to lie to you, I'm a little nervous about this whole new uniform business that's coming next year. The Jets have announced that they will have new uniforms for the 2019 season, so just keep that in mind if you're going out to buy a jersey, that it's going to be obsolete. You know, I mentioned this a couple mailbags ago, that I got I got a Keyshawn Johnson jersey for Christmas 97, and the Jets changed their uniform for 98. So essentially that Christmas gift became, I wouldn't say obsolete because I still wore the jersey, but you know, it became outdated. It became a throwback almost immediately. So, you know, keep that in mind. And I'm a little worried about these new uniforms, because you look at the new uniforms that come into the NFL these days, and there are a lot more ugly ones than there are good ones. And I would even say that the ones that are good tend to be throwback uniforms. They tend to take the team back to its old days. The Jets are already wearing their throwback uniform. So I'm not going to lie, I'm a little concerned about this whole business. I thought what they did on Monday night looked really good. And I really like the white face masks. I'd like to see them go to that full time. Our next question deals with the upcoming NFL draft. And I mean, I have to give you a little scolding here. I mean, we're week two of the season. Jets look great week one. Why are we talking draft? But I'll be happy to answer the question. Should the Jets double dip on the offensive line in the upcoming draft like they did with the safeties Adams and May? Well, first I have to, you know, I always have to throw this disclaimer out there. You can't go in and say that we're going to do this no matter what, because the circumstances have to be right. The right players have to be available there for you. You know, back in 2015, there was a minority, and I'm not saying it was a lot of fans, but there was a minority of fans who were calling for the Jets to draft the offensive line. They wanted the Jets to go offensive line no matter what, and they picked Leonard Williams instead. And I heard a few people, and again, this was not a lot of people, but I heard a few people annoyed that they did not address the offensive line. Well, the next offensive lineman who went after Leonard Williams, if they had gone offensive line, next guy who actually went in the draft was Eric Flowers. So there's a lot of debate now. It's still, in some ways, it's a little controversial because there's another minority of fans who are upset that the Jets did not draft Vic Beasley instead of Leonard Williams. I guess because Beasley is more of an edge rusher, which is more valuable than an interior type than Williams. But the point that I always make is, well, you know, you can complain that the Jets drafted Leonard Williams instead of Vic Beasley, but who's to say that they would not have picked Eric Flowers instead? You know, they could have messed that pick up a lot. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, there have to be players available who the Jets think through their scouting are going to be really good NFL players. You know, it can't be a guy who's not going to be that good. That said, I would skew in the direction, I would err in the direction of drafting offensive linemen and edge rushers in this year's draft, because that's what the Jets really need. So if all things are equal, if, you know, it's close between an offensive lineman and somebody else, if it's close between an edge rusher and somebody else, I would lean in that direction. So I don't have a problem with that. I would not have a problem seeing the Jets make a heavy investment in the offensive line in this year's draft, because Sam Darnold is everything for this franchise. And, you know, the example is out there of what can happen if you don't invest in the offensive line. And that's what happened to the Colts with Andrew Luck. That team did a terrible job protecting him early in his career. And part of the problem was Luck was so good that he bailed that team out. I mean, he carried that team to three playoff berths. He carried that team to an AFC championship, even though he did not have a very good offensive line. And maybe the Colts at that point thought that they could cut corners. Maybe they thought they did not need to invest in the offensive line. And we saw what happened. We saw how that impacted Luck's career. It almost destroyed Andrew Luck's career. So I would like to see the Jets invest heavily in the offensive line, you know, whether that's free agency, whether that's the draft. Now, if there's an edge rusher that's available, I may go away from the offensive line. If there are no good offensive linemen available, if there's nobody who matches the value of the pick the Jets are taking, where the Jets are drafting, then no, I would not go offensive line. But yeah, I would not have an issue with the Jets investing heavily at the position in the upcoming draft this year. Next question. After a great overall performance week one, what weakness do you expect to rear its ugly head in week two? What I would say, I'm not sure I'm going to guarantee anything, because we want to be optimistic here. We want this to be the podcast of the optimist, especially after a great week one. So I'm not going to say that I think a weakness is going to rear its head, but where do I wonder can the Jets sustain that performance? And I think it's on the offensive line. I think it's on the offensive line. We just talked about, you know, potentially drafting offensive linemen this coming year. That's where I look, because week one can be a little deceiving sometimes. You know, sometimes you just have a great game. You know, it's an out of context great game. And, you know, you fall back to earth the next week. And if that happens, you know, week eight of the season, nobody's really raising an eyebrow. Happens week one, sometimes maybe you overrate the guys a little bit. You know, was what we saw week one a solid offensive line performance? Was that just guys playing over their head in a way they could not sustain? And the other element of it, and look, part of the story on Monday night is that the Detroit Lions were really bad. They played terrible football. So to what extent, the Jets played well. I don't think there's any question the Jets played well. The Lions also played poorly. So the question is, how much of what we saw Monday was the Jets playing great? How much was the Lions playing poorly? We know we saw both. The question is, what percentage is the Jets? What percentage is the Lions? And, you know, we heard going into that game how much the Lions were struggling on up front on defense. So it was not a great test for the Jets. I'm still impressed that they passed it, because if you asked me going into Monday night, I was still very worried about it. So full credit to the Jets, but can they sustain that, moving into week two? You know, can the offensive line continue to play solid football? You know, can they play the way they did? So that's where I have my eye. It's not so much that I'm expecting it to fall apart, but my question is, can they sustain this over a longer stretch? And even if they do it week two, you know, we're only 1/8 of the way through the season. The question is, over the long haul, is this offensive line going to be a solid force for this team for the entire year? Now, I'll say this. I was not expecting to be here heading into week two asking this question. I was expecting the offensive line to be really bad. So the fact that we're asking this question right now is a good thing, because it shows you the offensive line played pretty well week one. That's where my concern is. That's where I'm skeptical. That's where I'm looking to see whether the performance can sustain itself. Next question. Are you still shocked that Lee, 1 week into the season, has two interceptions and a pick six? Well, now I don't want to be Francesa here and say I never said that and like have somebody play back an audio on it, but I don't remember saying Lee was Lee shocked me. Maybe I just can't remember what I said 2 days ago. But I mean, should I be shocked that Lee, the first round pick, went out and had a great game? I don't think so. I mean, I think he's a guy who I really liked the draft pick at the time. The guy's just been a disappointing player. I've had a few people tell me I'm biased against Lee. I'm not biased against Lee. The guy just hasn't played well. I really liked the pick. I thought he'd be a really good player when they drafted him. It just hasn't worked out so far. So, I'm not shocked he went out there and had himself a good game. Now, again, like the offensive line, the question is, can he sustain it? And I think you're hopeful the answer is yes, but there were also some things, he did not. The thing about Lee is that he played a phenomenal second half after playing kind of a shaky first half. And this was a point I made in an article I wrote on gangrenenation.com. Each week after a win, I give out a game ball, and I gave mine to Jamal Adams. Initially, I thought I was going to give it to Lee. Then I thought it through, and Adams really played four solid quarters. Adams played a great game, whereas Lee did not play that good of a first half and then played a phenomenal second half. So we'll see whether he can build on it. You know, sometimes it's just one little play that gets you going. And that, I'll tell you, after that first interception, he looked like a different player. I don't know whether it gave him confidence, whether it helped him calm down, but I mean, he finally looked like the type of impact player that you were hoping the Jets would have when they drafted him. And, you know, better late than never. You know, this is a big year for Lee. This is a big year for Lee. Could not have gotten off to a better start. But am I shocked that Lee played a good game? I mean, if I said that the other day, and I don't think I did, I'm not going to say I never said that, because my memory can be fault. You know, like anybody, sometimes I forget stuff. But I'm not shocked he played a great game. I think he's a guy who should play. You should expect your first-round pick to go out there and play pretty well. And next question, what's more of a shock? What do you see as more promising going forward? Lee playing like a professional linebacker, or the New York Jets actually returning and scoring on a punt return? Well, I just said, I guess I just answered that when we're talking. Boy, I don't know what it is about Darren Lee playing a good game and shocking. I don't find that shocking, though. So what's more of a shock is the Jets returning and scoring a punt return, because I thought the special teams were going to be terrible this year. And it's still, week one doesn't necessarily guarantee anything. It still might not be that great. But I was really, 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 really surprised with how well the special teams played. in week one, because if you looked at how bad they were in the preseason, especially, I mean, that Giants game was comedic how bad the special teams were. So I think that the much more shocking thing isn't Darren Lee playing well. It's the Jets playing well on special teams and returning a punt. And I mean, did anybody think Andre Roberts looked that explosive in the preseason? I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, I did not think Andre Roberts had that in him. I thought he was just going to be the steady guy. In preseason, my perception was that you had the explosive young guy, Trenton Cannon, and the steadier veteran in Andre Roberts back there, and Cannon just played himself out of the competition because he kept putting the ball on the ground. So you went with the steady guy, and Roberts goes out there, plays great, which is more promising going forward. That's Darren Lee. I mean, this defense goes to another level if Darren Lee keeps playing like that. So you knock on wood, you hope that he keeps playing that effectively, because that's what the Jets are looking for. The Jets want impact. The Jets want a Pro Bowl level player. It's got to come from somewhere. You know, I've heard that expectations are too high to expect Lee to have a Pro Bowl season. Well, where's the impact going to come from? It's got to come from your former first round picks. And the fact that Lee looked that way through 1 week of the season, that's a very, very positive development for the Jets. Next question deals with some good books on Jets history. And, you know, the one that really comes to mind for me, it's not a comprehensive review of the franchise. It doesn't give you the full story of the franchise. It focuses on one specific era, but it was a very interesting era in Jets history. It was this book, The Sack Exchange. It was compiled by a guy named Greg Prado close to a decade ago, I think. It was a while back. I think it was the early 2010s. Not quite 10 years ago, but you know, we're getting there. We're getting close to a decade old that book is. And it was an oral history of the Sack Exchange. So they got a number of the key figures from that era to kind of offer their take. So I think that that's a very interesting book on a very interesting era in Jets history. You know, the other book that's kind of obvious is Collision Low Crossers, where the author essentially spent the entire season inside the organization, inside the team facility for practices. It's an interesting book, I think, if you're an NFL fan, because it shows you the way an NFL team functions. It gives you like the NFL team schedule, like, you know, the week of practice, what gets installed here, what gets installed there, how the game plan is compiled, the role the assistant coaches have, and, you know, the way they divide up the responsibilities and putting up the game plan, what days the players have off. Just a very interesting look in the NFL, but the fact it was part of the Rex Ryan era, and I know this is recent history, you know, 2011 is not that long ago, but the fact it's recent Jets history, and again, that's another interesting era in Jets history, that the early Rex Ryan years, but particularly the 2011 season, which in many ways was a turning point for Rex Ryan, and not in a positive way after the smashing success in his early years. Interesting look at what went wrong that year for the Jets, you know, some of the characteristics that the key players showed that ultimately led to their respective downfalls. It's just a really interesting look on the team. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of books that just compile the full history, because I feel like a lot of it's just very surface stuff. I feel like a lot of the books that give the comprehensive history of a team just kind of give you they're too basic. They don't really take you inside an era. They don't really give you a ton of in-depth information about key eras. So I kind of look for more of a patchwork if you're looking to learn about the history of the team. You know, I recommend reading a book that really goes in depth about a specific era, and then move on to another book that goes into in depth about a different era. So I think, you know, those are the types of books I look for. So those are two good recommendations to get you started. One about the Sack Exchange era, one about the Rex Ryan era. Those are two very interesting periods of Jets history. That'll do it for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a wonderful Thursday. We'll be back again tomorrow. It will preview Jets Dolphins.